Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, in addition to the prop show we did earlier, it's the second part of our Super Bowl preview and X's and O's breakdown of the big game. Joining me to talk about that will be Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman, to break down the running games of these two teams, and Nate Tice of The Athletic to talk about the passing games of the Chiefs and Eagles. But first, I wanted to tell you about another ESPN podcast, and that is in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions. They present Kyle Brandt's Basement, led by NFL Network's Good Morning Football host, Kyle Brandt. This Sunday through Thursday show explores the ins and outs of the NFL through lively guest interviews, including Bills quarterback Josh Allen, every Tuesday. That's Kyle Brandt's Basement. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. All right, joining me now here on the Bill Barnwell Show, someone who understands the running game inside and out as a former NFL offensive lineman, which is one of the many reasons we're having him on to discuss the running element of this year's Super Bowl. And it's my friend Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, what's up?
Oh man, not much. You know, just doing the old Super Bowl circuit, getting ready for the game, man. It's a lot of fun. This is a fun week, man. It's like, you know, this whole build up for this one game. You talk it through, you think about everything, and then hopefully everything you say happens like you said it would on Sunday. And normally, I don't know, it's like 50-50. Some things you say work and some things you say just do not happen at all.
Yes, I'm still waiting for that year where everything happens the way I expected it to. If it does, I'm retiring immediately afterwards.
If it did, we'd be really rich. You know, like if all my prop wagers went exactly how I thought the game would go, I'd be pretty rich. So it's not always the way it goes.
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to have you on. Of course, you are a former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman under Andy Reid, so you have a lot of insight there. Also to talk about the Eagles. This is a really fun matchup in terms of the Philadelphia run game. And we want to talk about the Kansas City run game as well. So let's start with the Eagles side, though. And let's start with Jason Kelce, because I feel like, you know, he has gotten so much attention over the past few weeks, maybe because he's retiring, maybe because it's Kelce versus Kelce, maybe because of how he played in the NFC Championship game. But just to paint a picture from your perspective, how different does this Eagles running game with Travis Kelce look versus other teams and their running games?
Well, I think it's the versatility of what Jason can do, right? So he can, you know, he can block you straight ahead, right? Obviously. Mm-hmm. But then he can also get on the move really well, right? So it allows you to do so many different things and give the defense so many different looks, right? You have one look where, okay, you're running zone this way. Okay, next time, mm-hmm, actually it looks like zone, but nope, Kelce's pulling around the left guard, you know, to create this big gap between the left, you know, left guard and left tackle. Here he is, running up the middle, mm-hmm, you know, running between those guys to block the linebacker. Oh, it's a quarterback draw. Here's Kelce leading down the field. Like, there's so many things you can do with him. And if you try to say, look, we're gonna man up, or, you know, we're gonna put a zero nose on this smaller center, it doesn't matter because he's so quick off the ball, he's so explosive, he's so powerful, that the versatility allows Eagles to do so many different things. Where, you know, other guys, some centers you have to hide, some centers you can't have one on one blocks, some centers can't get on the move. So the versatility it allows them gives the Eagles so many options in the run game that it makes it hard for defenses to stop.
Mm-hmm. So if you're a defense, like, is it a thing where you don't know where you're going to have to prepare, like where you're going to get hit from?
Well, yeah. So the way I would defend the Eagles right now, mm-hmm, is I would force Jalen Hurts to keep the ball on every single RPO. Mm-hmm. I would force him, because I would say, look, I think the Eagles have an advantage when they're building those double teams right now, right? When you have a double team on Chris Jones, a double team on whoever else is playing besides him, right? Whether, mm-hmm, it's Saunders or someone else. And also, too, I'm really concerned about the Chiefs on the third down. The Eagles love to run the ball on third and medium, which I absolutely, mm-hmm, love. And you put, mm-hmm, you put Dana in there, 51, and he's going to get shot to the moon by a double team, you know, by Mulata and Dickerson there. So, like, so I would force Hurts to keep the ball. It takes away those double teams now are mitigated, right? Because you're not handing the ball off anymore. And, mm-hmm, also it's very clear that Hurts is kind of favoring getting that shoulder hit when he runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more opportunities to hit him. And I know that sounds maybe a little harsh and maybe not in the spirit of, I don't know, football, but that is what football is, right? Like, there's a disadvantage. Maybe Hurts isn't 100%, and you can kind of get that out of him by forcing him to be more of the ball carrier in this game. But again, mm-hmm. it takes away those double teams. Like, it makes the Eagles' offensive line, takes the game out of their hands, and now puts it onto the edge if you throw the pass or to Jalen Hurts, and you say, okay, Jalen, like, how many times are you willing to run the ball and possibly get your shoulder hit?
Mm-hmm. So when you say put it on Jalen Hurts, schematically, how would the Chiefs go about doing that?
So I call it gap exchange. And look, I feel like I'm qualified to talk about this because I was at the forefront of this with Chip Kelly in college. I was at Oregon, my senior year, his first year at Oregon. And we invented the read option, but we got popular. Now, Rich Rod was running a little bit of it. It was running on some lower levels, obviously, but like we brought it mainstream. So when we installed these runs, we went through all the machinations of like how teams would stop us. Like we saw it throughout this year. And the way teams do it is they do something they call a gap exchange, right? Where the read has been the same for years and years. The quarterback is reading. No, I take that back. There's different reads. You can have a pre-snap read, a post-snap read, but most commonly, the quarterback is reading the defensive end, okay?
Yep.
So the defensive end crashes down, so he takes that B gap, essentially, B to A gap. He removes himself out of the C gap. The quarterback keeps the ball, right, because he's going to tackle the run. He's unblocked. And the linebacker scrapes across to fill that gap. So they're gap exchanging, right? Now, the B gap and A gap is taken by the defensive end. The linebacker has the C gap now, right? Now, of course, that puts, let's say, like a Willie Gay on a Jalen Hurts. I would actually favor Jalen Hurts in that matchup, right? So like that's a disadvantage for Chiefs. But you can also sort of gap exchange with a safety being that guy too. So you have a safety fill that spot. Linebacker stays in the box. Now, you have one less defender, obviously, to defend the pass if it's a play-action pass, or if they're going to throw an RPO behind that safety. There's different ways you can do that offensively to stop that, but there's, again, you can force the ball out of his hand based off of a pre-snap look, have too many guys in the box, or a post-snap look, have that gap exchange. And the Niners tried it. The first touchdown on Sunday, I guess now previous Sunday, to Miles Sanders, the one when he walks in the end zone, the Niners did a gap exchange. The problem was the backside tight end, and it was Goddard, blocked the defensive end, and so it wasn't really a zone read, it was a straight handoff, and the Niners got caught, and because the linebacker scraped outside to take Hurts and the defensive end was blocked and there was no one in the middle of the field, so that's the risk you run. If they just run a straight inside zone and you gap exchange, you're dead in the water. There's no one in the middle of the field. So that's why the safety being that guy is kind of the fill guy on the gap exchange makes more sense, especially because Spags, he likes the pressure so much. Trent McDuffie has been good at tackling. He doesn't need a safety, be a nickel corner, someone like that, Sneed, you know, someone to be in that role. That feels like a way they would do this. I don't think the Chiefs want, I wouldn't want to line up and say, let's play like 6-on-6 big boy football in the box. Like that's the Eagles' advantage, in my opinion. So I think force Jalen Hurts, if you force him to be like the runner or the thrower in the RPO, you lessen the impact of that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last week where the Eagles were taking advantage of the Niners having an overload to the strong side, and they were running to the weak side. They were running, different concepts to the weak side, some zone read, some option stuff. And then Niners countered, and they started to bring Hufanga back into the box. And then we saw the Ted Woodward about this with the Athletic, the Jalen Hurts run where they brought in Boston Scott blocked Hufanga, and then it was just Jalen Hurts with Kelce leading on a lead draw for a big game.
Yeah.
And there was no one there because the safety had been in the box and they'd been adjusting to that. So I think, you know, it really seems like it's tough for the Eagles because they just have so many counters to, you know, the ways you might have to defend something.
It really is an advantage to have a quarterback like Hurts and the Eagles, I think, smartly building the offense around his talents, right? Like you mentioned the extra blocker on the block. Like you have an extra blocker. Like even on the touchdown, the second Miles Sanders touchdown where Kelce pulled around, they had the little fold block between left guard and center. The linebackers were late to fill because they were worried about Jalen Hurts keeping the ball. Like even that split second decision of like, oops, he might not, like, that's enough in the NFL for running back to not get touched, right? And they have built an offense for Jalen Hurts. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is excellent at offense. And I give the Eagles credit for saying, look, we're going to build an offense that fits what our quarterback does. We're not going to make him do something that he's not good at, or that, you know, that doesn't fit what he does. We're going to build an offense for him. We're going to use our pieces we have up front. And they deserve a lot of credit for that because they do that really well.
Yeah. I mean, it has really become a multiple rushing attack. They have so many different ways to do it. And then Kelce just adds sort of a compounding factor. How valuable do you think Jeff Stoutland is?
Oh my God. I mean, how much, like, I don't even know. Think about this. The Eagles have eight offensive linemen, I believe, and all eight are drafted. Okay. Mm-hmm. They have a first round offensive tackle. Doesn't even play on Andre Diller. And basically all those guys, except Kelce, were drafted by Stoutland because Kelce was an Andy Reid pick. Lane Johnson was the first player drafted by Chip Kelly, which was Stoutland's first season. And then you have, obviously, Isaac was drafted in the third round, I believe, at Oregon State in 2016. You have Mulata, who did not play football, American football, until I was writing an article about this for Fox Sports, and I was like looking it up. So he played rugby. Like there was some scouting video that went about IMG Academy in Florida, saw it, was like, hey, do you want to learn how to play football? They brought him to IMG in February of 2018. Stoutland saw him for some reason and drafted him 2 months later in the seventh round. And all of a sudden he's a Pro Bowl, all pro level player at left tackle 5 years later. It's incredible. And Landon Dickerson. And look, sometimes you get luck, like Landon Dickerson, for example, just like the Chiefs and Trey Smith, like you kind of get lucky that guys fall to you, right? Dickerson was a first round guy all the way. He hurt his knee in the SEC championship game and he fell to the Eagles. Like you just kind of fall into that. You just kind of get lucky there. But to have the longevity of the players you've had, to sign them to contracts, to avoid injuries, like it's all a huge plus. And Stoutland deserves all the credit, man. Like it's so impressive. You say draft and develop is the best way to build an offensive line, which is what I firmly believe. But you rarely get five or eight guys like they have to draft and develop. It's so rare in the NFL right now. And he deserves as much money or more. I don't know how much they're paying him. Probably not enough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he just got a new deal, but I just think offensive line coaches, I mean, if you can develop two or three linemen on your roster, you don't have to go out and sign those guys as free agents. They keep your quarterback healthy. I mean, I think those guys are worth many dollars.
It's the Chiefs, right? The Chiefs draft, they have three guys they've drafted, right? Well, I guess while he was undrafted, free agent. So three guys they've developed, right? And they had the two free agents. Like that's kind of like sort of, I think, how you would ideally build it up, right? You get three or four guys on rookie contracts and you've drafted, and you have one or two guys you pay a little bit too much money to, right? Like that's sort of the ideal offensive line, but it has to start with draft and develop. Like you have to have that as the core concept of your building for, in my opinion, in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Something I've noticed from the Eagles, both in the passing game and in the running game, is that when they have a concept that's working, they just go back to it. They'll hit it over and over and over again until you stop it. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, do you think more teams should do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Why don't they?
Because, Bill, you followed this game long enough. Coaches, just they have egos, right? Like, you spend all week preparing for stuff, and you spend all week drawing up plays, and you're like, I'm gonna run the freaking plays I stayed up all night to draw. But I drew this play up all week. We're running this play, and like they just have egos, right? And they wanna impress. They wanna show how cool the formation is. And just run what works. Like, yes, run it until they stop it. Like, if the Chiefs cannot defend inside zone on Sunday, Eagles should run it 27 times. Like, run until they stop it, right? Like, I do not understand why you wouldn't do that as a coach. Just call it till someone stops it. So I love it. If you have a scheme that you think works and it does work, keep calling until they stop it.
Was there a moment in your career where you had a moment where you guys were just moving the ball and you ran the same play five or six times in a row?
Yeah, I mean, Carolina, we we had this play we called Buster. It's my favorite run play of all time. It really is a great run play. Yeah, it's a mid zone with a fullback. And so the fullback is that kind of the fulcrum. You have to have a fullback that understands. And in Carolina, we had Brad Hoover, who played running back in college, which is important. So basically, ideally, you run the ball to the three techniques. You run the ball front, you know, two or three techniques. So that's a defensive tackle shaded on the front side guard shoulder, outside shoulder. And you read that guy. And you typically get an eight-man box, you have a tight end and a fullback. So if the three technique expands out, so if the snap of the ball from the right guard, I go block the three technique, he goes outside, he goes to the lane, then the fullback cuts back and blocks the defensive end who's unblocked, and the running back follows him backside, okay? Because now you're pushing all front side, and then boom, you wind it back a little bit. If the three technique goes inside the snap of the ball, the fullback stays front side, blocks the Sam linebacker who's unblocked if you run it back to the backside because he's not in the play. So you basically have one guy unblocked. Either the backside defensive end is unblocked or the front side Sam. And the fullback keeps it front side. So you basically have two different runs within one concept. We'd run that play, that in duo. Like we would run that play. I love how duo now, like that play's been around for 50 years. It's like now it's like, dude, oh my God, it's duo. I'm like, yeah, okay. Like when I got in the NFL in 2008, we ran duo and Buster. Like we watched the Steelers and the Giants run duo 50 times a game. Like the Steelers teams with Ben when they were making the Super Bowl every year, they had giant offensive linemen. They just ran duo every single run play. Like the funny, like people act like this is a brand new run that is invented in the NFL 7 years ago. Teams running duo forever. We ran duo and Buster till the crows came home, man. Like just run it. Because Buster, again, you have so many different options. You get front side, back side. It's a very fun play to run.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of the Chiefs, now, in terms of the running backs, I think everyone kind of agrees or at least believes they got a spark when they added Isaiah Pacheco to the lineup to replace Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is coming back for this game with a high ankle sprain, but Pacheco, you assume, is going to be the focal point. But the running game has been inconsistent. They have not run the ball effectively, you know, consistently week after week, even though they have a bunch of talented offensive linemen. You know, and of course a passing game that teams are terrified of dealing with. So what do you think is missing from this Chiefs rushing attack right now to get them to be a more consistent week to week chain mover on the ground?
I don't like their run game. It's very disjointed. All these gun runs, I hate it. I don't think they put much priority in it too. Like it's not what they want to do. So like the Eagles want to run the football. So they put priority into practice. I'd imagine running the football. The Chiefs, you know, they have 9-on-7 like everyone else does, but the rest of practice is spent throwing the ball, which I get it. Like I'm not knocking the number one offense in the NFL. Like you have Pat Mahomes. Sure. Like I get like, okay, 15 go win us the game, but they have good, like to your point, they have good offensive linemen. We've talked about this, like under center, they're good when they want to run the football. They just don't. And the weird thing this year, too, like they're really bad on third and short running the ball this year. I don't know if it's Trey Smith's ankle that's bothering him, which he hurt during the season. It's kind of, he's not been quite the same player, but they're just not as good this year. I don't really have a great reason why. I think, again, the run game is just disjointed. Like, I don't like their gun runs. They try to RP, it's like a RP. They don't hit downhill fast enough. Also, the backs just don't have great vision. Like, that's part of it, too, is the backs, like, still – Pacheco has the best vision of them all. That's why he's playing more. And so it's a combination of, like, the backs aren't great. I don't like – it's just a disjointed run game. You talk about the Eagles, right? Like, they kind of lather into the same runs. So I thought, like, they kind of just run it. Okay, here's a little changeup of a run. The Chiefs don't do that. Like, the Chiefs just don't go into a game and say, okay, here's our two and three really good runs. Like, let's just get to these and see how we feel. That's not what they do. So – I think it's just hard to get in a rhythm in that run game. I just don't like it. It just feels so disjointed and like not what it should be. But again, I can't fault them because they're so good passing the football and they have the best quarterback in football. Like, I get why they focus so much on passing the football.
But like, are those two things mutually exclusive? Like, can you have the best quarterback in passing attack in football and still run from under center?
Yeah, I mean, you can, because I think they should do more play action from under center too. So like I think that's a great. I think that's like the greatest play in football is play action under center, from under center. So, yeah, but it's just not what Andy Reid is. I mean, look, Andy Reid is in his 60s, right? If I'm correct on that, like he's been calling football games for he's been head coach for 24 years now. This is what he is, right? Like this is what he is. I think I heard him say he's 14 years in Philly and 10 years in Kansas City. He's been there, like he's this is what he is. So to expect him to all of a sudden be this like I'm going to run the ball, it's just not what he does. It's not what he does. Again, nothing wrong with that. It's not he's not right or wrong. I mean, I would like to see him run the ball more as a lineman, and I mean, there are certain instances in games where they have trouble closing out games because they do not run the ball well enough at certain times. But this is what he is. He is a guy who wants to pass the football, and you know, it's a fault at times, I think. But again, like how much do you fault someone who's had this much success running offenses? That's the hard part for me. Like I wish I could say like, you know, Andy, if you run the ball, you'd be better. But what better can they be, right? The number one offense in the NFL.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, if they end up being, you know, how much better can they really get? But you did mention that third and short is a problem, and it's been there. One of the worst third and short offenses
this
in
year,
football
yeah.
this season. One of the things they have done in the past that I wanted to ask you about, just to kind of lay out the impact it has on the defense, is the jet sweep. Because I do think we're going to see the Chiefs use the jet sweep, probably with Kadarius Toney, if he's healthy in this game, to try and slow down the Eagles and sort of try to attack them without having to block the guys on the edge.
Yeah, but the fly sweep has not been as good as it has been in the past. I mean, they know they're going to. Like, in last week, they got they got 1.1 yards, like needing a yard on third down on one of the fly sweeps. I think what they're going to do, I'll give you one, I think. If Pat Mahomes is healthy, one of my favorite run plays for them is they do a speed option with Mahomes, and they do that in big games. Like, if he's healthy, that's a great play. Speed option against like a fast pass rusher like Reddick or Sweat. That, to me, feels like a third down option for them than the fly sweep. It's just running an option, you know, Mahomes, you know, get the first down, get down, but give yourself an option to obviously keep the ball, pitch the ball. And I have to imagine there has to be a payoff for the fly sweep. They've done so much of it. The question is, what's the payoff, right? So there's the idea of, you know, you fake the fly sweep and you roll Mahomes out. That's a possible option as well. There's going to be, Bill, you know this, man. There's going to be one stupid play the Chiefs run in the red zone. It's going to be something. It's going to be this fly sweep, like, counter. It's going to be something so stupid. You're going to be like, what are you doing? What are we doing, Chiefs? It's going to be off this fly sweep. I'm telling you, man. But, you know, the fly sweep to me, it has worked in the past, but, like, it hasn't worked as recently. Because, again, I think teams are realizing the Chiefs just don't run the ball very well on third and short. How about this one? What if the Chiefs bring out a quarterback sneak?
My next question.
They haven't done that since he hurt his knee.
Mm-hmm. That was my next question, Jeff.
I don't think he has one sneak attempt since he dislocated his knee. Now, they run sneaks with, like, Noah Gray. They put him at quarterback. They have zero with Pat Mahomes. If you do it at any time, it's Sunday.
Mm-hmm. He said that. So they asked him. Or he was doing a press conference during the season, and they asked him about the sneak, and he said, I want to do it, but since the knee injury, which remember he suffered the dislocated knee against the Broncos, I think in 2019, has not run a sneak since. They've run him on speed option. He did suffer, I think, a concussion on the speed option in the playoffs against the Browns.
Yeah, the Browns, he did.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, they've not done any sneaks with him. They've done it with Blake Bell. I think they may have done it with Kelsey once or twice, but they have done it, you know, the sneak with other people. And of course, the other side of the field, you have the Eagles, who have the push sneak, which is the cheat code for fourth down. I don't know if the Chiefs would do a push sneak. I don't know if they would do a normal sneak. But Mahomes said, if I was ever going to do it, I'm saving it for the Super Bowl. So maybe this is one time you see Mahomes do it.
There's no way that they allow the push sneak to be in the NFL next season, right? There's no way, right?
What do you think?
I think it's going to be outlawed. I don't think they're going to let that happen anymore. It's too easy, right? Like,
it would be hard to outlaw it, though, right? Like, how do you? What's the call?
You just say, that you can't push offensive players forward.
So can you? But like, you know, we see it do it at the end of plays, like, you know, when you have guys push forward to the pile.
So yeah, but that often is you pushing the defender who's holding on to the offensive player. That used to be the rule, right? Like you couldn't push, like in college football, you couldn't push the offensive players forward. It's why the Bush push was such a big controversy. But you could push a pile forward if you get a defensive player that was holding on to the offensive player. So that's the distinction, right? Like, you can't physically push Jalen Hurts forward, but if he was being held up by Chris Jones, you can push Chris Jones, and that propels Jalen Hurts forward. That'd be the rule change, right? Like, you can't push your own player forward, but you can still push a defensive player like you're blocking him forward.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you do you have a prediction for this game?
I mean, I keep thinking the Chiefs are going to win. I don't feel great about it. I mean, the Eagles are better everywhere, but, you know, but quarterback, right? And this is the big difference. Mm-hmm. Is like, I just, you know, I just have this feeling like this is like the Andy Reid like masterpiece game that you like hold up in the Hall of Fame, right? You're like, this is the game plan right here, right? We're like, you're down a couple wide receivers. The Eagles have 70 sacks. Like, there's monstrous defense, and you just slice up number one defense. Mahomes has had great success in his career facing number one pass defenses, by the way. I mean, just a small sample size of that. But this just feels like that game for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a Chiefs homer, but I'll take a healthy 15 in this game. I have Chiefs 30-28.
Oh, I'm not. I think I have Chiefs 31-27. So I don't think I'm far off from you.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like early in the week it was all Eagles, and now it feels like it's gone the other direction where people are more like, yeah, you know, the Chiefs are pretty good guys still. It's funny because when you say, like, isn't it crazy though? Like, if you say, which is true, like, the Eagles' offensive line is better than the Chiefs' offensive line. The Chiefs' offensive line still has two All Pros.
Right, it's not right? bad. It's
like, right, like the you know the Eagles' defense line is better than the Chiefs. Yeah, but the Chiefs still have Chris Jones, and like Frank Clark turned into like Frank Clark is like the best postseason pass rusher of all time. You know, the Chiefs, you know, the Eagles secondary is better than the Chiefs. Yeah, but have you watched the Chiefs play recently? Like, their secondary is pretty good. It's like the Chiefs are not that far away from the Eagles talent wise. They just have a bunch of young players on defense, and they're a little injured wide receiver, right? So, it's going to be – I am excited. I just want – for me, I'm a Chiefs fan, obviously. Like, I want there to be no more rushing Andy Reid. Like, this is – I want the end of that. Like, I want – this is the end. Like, he wins this game. We're done with, like, is he this good? It's done. It's done forever. It's over with. He's won a second Super Bowl. Like, no more of this, like, I don't know if you can win the big one all the time. Like, no more of that. I just don't – we're done with it. So that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for the end of the Andy Reid, like, I don't know if he's really good. I don't know if it's – is it Pat Mahomes? Like, done forever. Done. Never talk about it again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, second, you got to figure second Super Bowl would do that. It's going to be a close game, I think, either way. But yeah, still, it could go in so many different directions. You know, it could be a blowout on the other side. It could be a close game for either side. So I think it's going to be an actually fun game.
I think the only blowout would be the Eagles, but not by that much, though. Like, there's no way you're not blown unless you just sack Pat Mahomes 100 times.
Which has not happened before. I mean, it's not out of the question.
Oh, certainly not. I just think the Chiefs will have a plan for that. I'm really looking forward to the Chiefs screen game this weekend. Ooh, yeah. It should be fun.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Jeff, where can people check out more of your Super Bowl coverage in the next few days?
Yeah, just go to at Jeff Schwartz. At Twitter, my podcast is Smarter Than You. That's where you can find most of my coverage.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. But don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, thanks so much, Jeff. And now, joining the show to break down the passing element of the Super Bowl and these two teams' passing games, live from, I believe, Radio Row, if I'm not mistaken.
The hallway outside Radio Row. Not because, the hallway. Not because they won't let me in. Well, maybe that, but because I'm trying to find a nice, quiet spot, if that even exists around here.
A man who is too good or not good enough for Radio Row, depending on who you ask. It is the Athletics, Nate Tice. Nate, what's up?
I'm doing great. Not much is up. I'm glad it's just the passing game. I was worried that I had to get some special teams notes ready, you know, for this discussion. So I'm glad you kind of went down the avenue that I like to watch. Nothing against special teams, but I like to watch and I like to talk about. So I'm very excited to join you, Bill, as always.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm not doing a special teams podcast. Frankly, someone should, because it'll be the only special teams focused podcast on the Super Bowl that I can think of.
Yeah, turn over every stone, man. You know, for content purposes. Maybe that's a true YouTube video I can get 400 views on. Maybe there it is, right there.
Well, we will today focus on your core competency of passing football. We will focus on it with both teams because they have two very interesting passing attacks here and teams that have undergone changes over the offseason. So I want to kind of just, you know, set the scene for folks who are watching the Super Bowl. Let's start with the Chiefs. How has their passing offense changed over this year without Tyreek Hill in the lineup?
It's they've gotten, not just because they got rid of a 5'10 receiver, but they've gotten just bigger overall. Mm-hmm. And not only just the receivers that they're utilizing, and Juju Smith-Schuster and MVS, and, you know, they trickle in some other guys, but all the tight ends that they use. And getting into not only just 12 personnel with two tight ends, but 13 personnel with three tight ends, and attacking vertically out of those looks, making defenses try to be basic. But also, I think the Bengals game last year, that Twitch stream that you and I have talked about numerous times, where I was slandering various Bengals players for no good reason because I was just so mad at what Mahomes was doing. It was that in that game, they were very spread to run, you know, spread to pass, a lot of RPOs. And that's stuff that the Chiefs still do. But I think now their offense has become more almost like they went back to the basics of passing football. Running the play action from under center out of three tight ends. I mean, that's something you used to see like from probably the 94 Packers, you know, stuff, that old school West Coast stuff. And I think that's where you see the kind of the next steps with this offense, or just now it's, they kind of do a little bit of everything. It's kind of a greatest hits types offense for passing concepts, as opposed to last year where it seemed a little more quick gamey and everything was underneath. I think now this is the way that they attack over the intermediate parts of the field. When you have a quarterback that can throw everything, well, let's run a little bit of everything. And I think that's what they're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about the move towards bigger personnel groupings. Like you said, not just 12, but also 13. They run 2+ tight end sets more than 40% of the time now, up from, I believe, 28% last year. So in terms of, you know, I think
you gave that stat in between the Olsen twins movie references on ESPN Daily with Pavla. I think I did hear that stat, so I'm glad you got to repeat it again because it matters. It really does matter.
Also, the Olsen twins references really went over more than I expected. Oh, I think I really, really struck a niche that I did not know existed
in the Venn diagram of football fans and people who are aware of Olsen twins movies.
I was just not. I had an older sister. That's my defense here.
I had a younger sister.
I just wasn't ready for it. And I actually knew what you were talking about, which actually made me laugh even harder when I was in the car listening to it. This is going to sound like a little spoiled suburban kid, but when I was in high school, my parents went on spring break. They went to the Atlantis in the Bahamas. Sure. And I was there, and how many high school girls I saw running around, and even, you know, tween girls running around going, this is where the Olsen twins were at the Atlantis. Cause I guess they had one of the movies there. I think I remember my sister was pretty excited about it too. So really? That's why my Olsen twins like movie reference is just the Atlantis was in one of their movies.
I when I lived in New York, I did not meet anyone who said, oh my God, this is where they filmed New York Minute, the Olsen twins movie. But to be fair, that is that I may not have just heard it. I wanted to ask about the sort of those bigger personnel groupings. Going to 12, going to 13, and having those 2-3 tight ends in the field. So what does that make the defense do in terms of a personnel basis, and how does that make things easier for Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes?
So before, with Travis Kelce being such a dynamic player, and you know, I would say his blocking is, it's fine. As a blocker, he's okay right. as a blocker. And because he's such a dynamic receiving threat, his defenses treat him like a receiver. They look out there, they might see two tight ends on the field, 12 personnel, as everyone else calls it, but they treat him like a receiver. So that's 11 personnel. So they treat it as a 3 wide receiver set. And what was happening there is that's usually where a tight end can create an advantage is, oh, they have to match with bigger personnel groupings. Typically, defenses match base to base. You know, there's exceptions like the Bills run nickel every single play. You know, the Cowboys run light DBs every single play. But typically a defense will see 12 personnel and they trot out base, which is either a 3-4 defense or a 4-3 defense. The key mm-hmm. part of it is that there's only 4 DBs out there and there's more linebacker bodies. So not only just using different variations of 12, you know, having Noah Gray in there, sometimes it's Fortson in there. Sometimes it's Gray and Fortson or Bell, you know, when he was healthy, you know, they were mixing and matching those guys. How the Chiefs are like, okay, you guys don't want to put heavy bodies on the field and let us pass on you. All right, so we're going to get into 13 with 3 tight ends. And then it's like, then it was, we're going to make you put the heavy bodies on the field, and then we're going to throw against it. The other advantage of that was when teams wanted to keep the light bodies on there, they're like, nah, ha, ha, we're not going to let Travis Kelce beat us. They have been very successful running the ball out of those looks. So I think that is what they found, is that was their way to hold the pen last, as our mutual friend Robert Mays will say. That was they hold the pen last was to get into these personnel groupings and now get to dictate putting the defense, making the defense wrong, or at least leaning towards being wrong just by sheer personnel and what they have to run. And also another thing, if a defense does match with base, is that they're a lot more simplistic, is mm-hmm. the blitz packages aren't as extensive. Covered shells are a lot, you know, a lot less complex because there's a linebacker on the field. And I'm not going to teach my linebacker how to carry and match and do all this and cut rules and all those types of things. So those are all just random terms I threw out there. The defense people doesn't matter, but just random words. But because of that, is now they become simplistic. It becomes way easier to throw the ball. And again, if they want to match with light bodies, then we can just run it on them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think I had the numbers here. So when the Eagles face 12 personnel this year, they do match with their base 45% of the time. They'll go to a nickel package about 38% of the time, and then a little more for the other groupings, but they will match up with base more often than not, or more often than nickel. So that's an opportunity for the Chiefs. We saw is it Jody or Joe Fortson? Because I feel like it was Jody and now it's become Joe.
Has it become Joe? I always call him Jody. I mumble way through it, so it doesn't matter.
The NFL's website, Next Gen, has changed it to Joe as opposed to Jody.
I didn't know that. Well, yeah, I learned something new every day with the Super Bowl. There's every mm-hmm. stone. Every stone's mm-hmm. getting turned over.
But we saw a member of the Fortson family, whose first name begins with the letter J,
Jay Fortson,
pick up like a 40-plus yard play on the Chargers, where he was up against Bryce Callahan, and he ran like a motion wheel, and mm-hmm. and Mahomes threw like the best pass the entire year, which, from Mahomes' standards, is pretty impressive. you know, like there's going to be explosive plays if they stay in that personnel grouping. So if you're the Chiefs, is that something you're going to really try and hit hard to match up with what the Eagles have to work with on defense? Like, how would you try and attack the Eagles given you figure that they have such a good pass rush?
Yeah, that's it. I know we're talking about passing games and everything, but I do think it's going to be a more run-heavy script from the Chiefs because the Eagles' defense is very, very good against the pass. And I still think that, you know, if they did have a weakness, is that the run game, they're more fine. Their run defense is more just kind of middle of the pack, especially against those heavier personnel groupings. I'm trying to find the stat right now, but I do think it was either 12, when they do defend 12 and 13 personnel, is that I think they're like 16th in success rate, in rush success rate. When they're typically top 10 or top 8 and everything, that matters. No, just getting them to be a little bit worse. So I think that's how the Chiefs are going to do it, is just to make them pick their poison. Like, all right, you're going to let us, the Chiefs have a strong offensive line, like literally strong offensive line. And that's a way to get the pass rush to slow down. Oh, shoot, we got to worry about them, you know, double teaming us as opposed to just pinning my ears back. Oh, now we got to, I have to get around the tight end. The tight ends also unlock, you know, more play action concepts. You know, they're able to kind of get more to, they can get to different formations out of that. The Chiefs, I think, against the Jaguars, they were getting into in the playoffs in the divisional round. They were getting into that 13 personnel look, and then they would motion. Oh, no, this was against the Bengals. They were getting the 13 personnel look, and they're motioning Kelsey into the slot, like a slot receiver. And then they ran four or five different plays off of that, including the hook and ladder, the failed hook and ladder that they tried in the red zone. That was a 13 personnel play. But, you know, they motioned Fortz into the slot there. But it just kind of lets them be a little more adaptable or more expand their offense without really adding too much mental stuff. And it makes the Eagles, you know, puts them, you know, behind the eight ball a little bit where it's like, okay, we have to guess that they're going to do this, you know, because you're always going to be worried about Mahomes. So I think that's what it is. It just puts some worry into the Eagles.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And certainly there is a, you know, like there's going to be a punch and a counter punch, right? Like we talked about a little bit with Jeff in the first segment of the show, where it is like, you know, it's not just going to be, oh, we have one move and then you're not going to be able to counter that move. Like stuff is going to evolve as the game goes along. So I'm intrigued to see how the Eagles match against that grouping. I'm intrigued to see what happens with the Chiefs once they see how the Eagles match. Like we saw the Eagles last week kind of evolve, you know, and change up their running game as the game went along. And so I wonder, you know, what that's going to mean for the Chiefs in the passing game.
Well, that's another thing with the Chiefs have evolved. I know we're talking about passing game, but the Chiefs have evolved their run game this year, not just the personnel, but the types of runs they run. They made it all work. And I also think, too, is that when the Eagles played the Chiefs last year in the 2021 season, they treated Kelsey like a receiver. So I'm curious if, you know, do they look at this year's film and they go, no, that's what we're treating like. So I know it's like you said, the punch and counter punch was especially with some really good coaching staffs that know personnel really well. It's really interesting to see how they're going to kind of create those advantages.
How do you think the Eagles will deal with Kelsey in this game? Like when he's on the backside of the 3x1 sets, will it just be Darius Slay or James Bradberry in man? Or how do you think they'll handle that?
I think you nailed it right there. They got two very good corners that are, I wouldn't say they're overly physical, but they're willing to be physical. And I think that matters a lot. I think they are... The Eagles kind of run what they run on defense. Like they tweak some things and they will change what they lean into depending on the week, but they're a zone heavy team. And so I think you might see where they're going to be aware of where Kelsey is. And I'm curious because a lot of teams will change. They'll run two man against him. They will drop an end and have him like collision Kelsey as well. So I'm wondering if some of those exotic looks, I think that's really not just with Kelsey, but way to kind of make Mahomes just, to get an edge against Mahomes is just to make him hesitate that split second. So I think there's going to be a lot of rotating coverages, even if none of them are exotic. I think there's just going to be like, oh, they're running cover three here, cover four here, cover two. They just run a little bit of everything just to change the picture on them. Kelsey also adapts his routes a lot. So that also might change the picture on him when he's trying to kind of ad lib his routes like he likes to do.
I was going to ask about that. Like how much freedom do you think Kelsey has to improvise stuff in the passing game?
Like a terrifying amount of stuff. He's Robin Williams out there. I can't believe they let him that much. I actually was just joking about this earlier. I think they said they let Kelsey and Mahomes kind of go off to the side and practice like on moves for 10 minutes. But I mean, the play, the third down play at the end of the Bengals game in the regular season, so wherever that was, week 13, that where they dropped eight, the Bengals did, Kelsey mm-hmm. was in the same spot as another receiver, and it's because he just ran to an open space. And to me, as the former coach in me and the former quarterback in me, like, I'm screaming the whole time, but then it's like, they're really good. So right. kind of let the good players do it, but they get a ton of – they. It's kind of find space as opposed to ad-libbing, and I think that's what it is, and they just – they maximize it where they do it on a ton of plays as opposed to just one or two, you know, some teams might have for those types of routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last year we talked about the Twitch where you got very mad at the Chiefs for their RPO game. Is it better this year?
It is. And also there's times Mahomes is handing the ball off when I'm actually like, oh, you should have thrown that one. When I think last year, the problem was he was throwing every single one, which I get it. Like if Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, you kind of want to do that. But sometimes you play a defense that goes, I know that you want to do that, and we're going to take it away. I think they just don't lean into it as much. They like to, when they're into two tight end looks, they like to run the little RPOs where they have two tight ends to one side, two receivers to the other side. It's a formation I call hip slot. YY wing is another way to call it. And they run RPOs that where they run double slants. Actually, the Eagles run that as well. So they call it like three or four times a game as opposed to last year where it was like every run play was tagged with RPOs. So I think it's more they just like trickle it in, just hit those easy buttons for Mahomes.
With the Eagles passing attack, they're a team that uses a lot of RPOs. Yes. Are you surprised? Or actually, ask you this. Of course, this is not new. Teams have run RPOs. The league is aware RPOs yes. exist. Do you think the Eagles' success with RPOs will encourage more teams to lean more heavily on them next year?
No, I think what your first statement was actually probably what it is. Everybody kind of has them now. I think maybe when teams are going to be more willing to use them to help out maybe young quarterbacks and mm-hmm. make it like, hey, what just, but hey, you ran like this in
college. Mac Jones?
Yeah, Mac Jones. Well, yeah, I mean, they should. but that's what you have to lean into is that helps out the quarterback so much because it's a one read thing. And it usually it's an easier pass, you know, a slant or an under route or something of that sort. So I think that's where I think coaches are more willing to do it. I think even 5 years ago when the other Eagles team, the 2017 team was doing it, a lot of people are going, oh, that's gimmicky. It'll get run out of the NFL soon. But just like every new fad that hits the NFL, it becomes distilled. It becomes like a purified version of it. So I think mm-hmm. I think teams are there might be some more. They look at maybe what college teams are doing to expand their RPO world, but it's not going away. I think every team's going to have their group of RPOs in there. Every team also has bubbles and flats, right. What I call package plays. That to me, you can call them all RPOs, but I call those package plays as opposed to downfield slants, which are RPOs to me. That's just me being old coach and all that. yeah, pretentious. but those package plays, those aren't going anywhere because that's a way you control defenses and help your offense, like have a nice, easy, you know, 5-7 yard gain for that can go for more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And certainly, you know, it has helped Jalen Hurts, but what else do you think has led to Jalen Hurts' growth as a passer? Like where has he gotten better to your eyes this year than even a year ago?
He's thrown to a guy named AJ Brown, and that's my first apparent like, oh, you really improved. Oh, number 11's really improved too. But I would say that I think with Hurts is he's also anticipating throws a lot better. He still doesn't throw over the middle as much as I would want to, but really it doesn't matter so far. But this game it might. Spoilers, but I think that he is leading throws. He's throwing it, even though overall he wasn't great against the blitz this year, there's numerous times where he was beating a blitz with a throw because of his timing. I think that's where he improved the most is, yes, he does have a lot of plays where he holds onto the ball and he's, you know, kind of creating mode. That's kind of how that's his game. I think there's been a lot more times now where he sees a blitz coming. He goes 1-2-3 and it's dropped and he lets the ball rip with anticipation, you know, real quarterback shit. that's a compliment. Is that's kind of how he is really, he's doing that more. Last year I saw maybe once or twice, and every other time it was that if he was facing blitz, he went straight into scramble mode, which is what the Bucks abused last year in the playoffs against them. And I think this year now he's found different answers for high leverage, high stress moments and leverage moments. I think he's just understood to take checkdowns on third and long because you mentioned this on the show with Pablo.
take those checkdowns because they know they're going for on fourth down. He, even though there's been games like the Bears game is the one that stands out to me where he's maybe pressing a little too much. I feel like he understands to just take what the defense gives him and finds those answers. Like he's just finding true every route on the concept as opposed to maybe just one. So I do think there is a real improvement of him finding answers. I think that's the best way I can put it.
Does he look any different to you coming back from the shoulder injury over these past 3 weeks than what you saw earlier in the season?
Yeah, he does. I mean, the throwing motion looks exactly the same. There's not like he's like kind of dropping the arm or anything, but I do, obviously it's affecting him. I think there are moments where a lot of times when he's throwing to his left as well. And I think maybe because you have to use more legs with that, using the legs and that, the arm has to come around. If you just, I'm in the hallway right now looking like a freak, by the way. I just did that throw what I'm talking about right now. If anyone's listening to this, I just realized what I was doing. I'm not in my office in Vegas anymore. Is that I think when he has to step to his left and use more of that arm and to like wrap it around, I see that where the ball is kind of going behind some of the receivers. Obviously, there's the go ball stuff, but to me, go balls, and there has been some effect with it. Go balls are going to do that, though. They're called 50-50 throws for a reason. Right. Sometimes you crap out five times in a row. It just happens. So, like, those are not really where I'm seeing it. I definitely know that. But sometimes I'm just not seeing those kind of sprays. I'm seeing more kind of the short intermediate sprays. But then he'll have a couple throws where it's like, hey, it looks fine. But then the other aspect is, of course, the design runs. I think there have been times where he's tough as hell. That's Hurts' number one quality, is that he's one of the toughest dudes in the league at any position. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where some of the design runs, it seems like he's pulling the parachute a little, where he's like, I'm just going to get down here because the coach has told me don't get more hurt. So I think that's where you're, no pun intended, but I think that's where you're seeing some of the drop off a little bit, because he's getting 4 yards instead of eight, you know, when he's running the ball, or those 50-50 throws and the underneath throws, he's missing just one or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean the numbers, the adjusted completion percentage for him, which adjusts for, I think there's drops, there's throwaways, and then there is you know, like adjusting for the depth of the pass. Those numbers are down for sure for him. I think he's like 58 now during the last 3 weeks, and then he was in the low to mid 70s, like 73, I want to say. Wow. Earlier in the year, so that has dropped. It could be a 3-game sample, and one of those games against the Niners, who are really good. So, you know, you don't want to like read too much into it, but it does look like there is some evidence at the very least that he has taken, you know, a bit of a step backwards since the injury.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, even the game that he got hurt, the Bears game, obviously he's hurt in that game that made him miss time afterwards. I mean, after he took two shots, I still don't know which one it was, but it might have been cumulative. But he was start spraying all the throws in the second half of that game. And it was like, okay, all right, obviously your shoulder's hurt. Now that we know your shoulder was hurt, it's very obvious when I'm watching this film. I watch these other games, I'm like, you know, the throws that he is spraying, the throws that he is missing, is that, okay, but that happens on those types of throws. But I do see it in those, that short, people are making out about the go balls, but I'm glad he brought up the adjusted completion, because I do think it is more some of those outward throws towards the sideline. You're seeing it where the arm really comes into play, because you have to put a little more oomph on it. And I think that's where it's hindering him a bit.
Makes sense. With the Chiefs in the secondary, of course, starting at least one rookie cornerback in Trent McDuffie. Last week with L'Jarius Sneed out, they were playing three rookie corners against Tyler Boyd, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. And they won. They won a game where they didn't score a ton of points. So can they survive against A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith? Like, how do you, if you're Steve Spagnuolo, what are you doing in this game to try and give those corners the best chance of succeeding?
A lot of doubling A.J. Brown and maybe Devontae Smith as well, which I know Steve Spagnuolo has in his kind of repertoire, is that he will go into the double coverages where they run. It looks like quarters where there's two safeties high. And those safeties are double teaming two of the receivers, your two best weapons. He will do that. And also, that Bengals game, there's a little more carryover from that AFC Championship game than I initially maybe thought, as far as how what the Chiefs were running. But when you look at the makeup of the teams, it kind of makes sense. The Bengals are a gun-heavy team. They run from the gun, just like the Eagles do. They have two very good receivers, outside receivers as well. And when you watch that game, what the Chiefs did was, okay, we're going to double Jamar Chase every time he's the long receiver. And what they did was we're going to double the slot, Tyler Boyd. But Boyd got hurt, and it was kind of funny when seeing Trent, what's his name, Irwin. He looks like Adam Cole. Yeah, he looks like Adam Cole. Trent Irwin, baby. And so, yes. So it's kind of funny how many double teams he was drawing, because that's what the game plan was. And that's why it was a T. Higgins game, because he gets the one-on-one. And to me, what I saw what the Chiefs defense was doing was, let's use the sideline as our ally, as our the 12th defender, the 12th man. I know that's trademarked by the Seahawks, but by using that and walling, that's where the T. Higgins dunk, which would have happened to any corner, was use the sideline, wall him towards the sideline, make the room for error so small that it's not a great throw to throw. That it's not like, there's better answers out there. And so I think there's going to be a little more carryover that that's how they kind of, they're going to double one guy for sure every snap. I'm curious if they do double two, and where, you know, because they will move Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown into the slot. So I'm curious. I think that's how they will go about it. And those corners, for how young they are, they've, I mean, Watson's he's played well this year for a seventh round rookie corner. He's actually like a starter. It's ridiculous. And so, like, you know, they're going to hold their own, but it is going to be tough because those guys are so freaking good.
Right. I mean, there's going to be plays like even in that last game where they did a pretty good job. There was still, like you said, that Higgins play and then the Jamar Chase fourth down where he just was a different human being than the guys covering him.
That was my guess. That I was like, you guys weren't outfielders in baseball, were you? Because that fourth and six, that ball went up in the air. Those guys did not track it whatsoever. So
Jamar did.
Jamar's very good at doing that. But yeah, that's exactly it. But that's how he's going to help them out. Is you don't have to cover him one. You're going to have to cover him one on one sometimes. But we're going to try and limit that. So I do think you're going to see more of that. Also cover two as well, which is a classic way if a guy's on the outside when these guys is one receiver, because that way you get the corner and the safety over there. But the Chiefs have been very good defending outside throws. It actually surprised me when I looked at the numbers, started really diving into their games leading up to the playoffs. But it's A.J. Brown and freaking Devontae Smith. So I'm sure they will get theirs at some point, but that's how they can make it hard on them.
Mm-hmm. What about the pass rush to finish up here? We talked about everything else, but what about the pass rush for the Chiefs? Do you think they're going to blitz Jalen Hurts a bunch? Do you think they're going to try and rush four? Like, what do you think that looks like as the game plays out?
I think on third and fourth down, they will not blitz. I think this is the fewest amount of snaps that Steve Spagnuolo, lowest frequency, I should say, that Spagnuolo has blitzed as a coordinator since he's been with the Chiefs year over year. I think
he has one blitz on third down in the postseason so far.
Yeah, he's not doing it right now, which I get it. But the blitzes might come on first and second down, which I like. I understand why he's doing that. I think that's another thing is the Eagles running backs aren't great protection. This has been the Cardinals game. This was very apparent. They've been trying to figure out who could do it for them or make way with that. That's a way to kind of, you know, maybe get a win, take advantage of their eyes. Spagnuolo's got every type of blitz in his cupboard. It's ridiculous what he could throw out there. So I do think you would see some blitzing on first and second down. Hurts again, hasn't been that great against the blitz, but what he does on third and fourth down, if you blitz him, he's gonna throw a go ball. Like it's locked in. That's what he's throwing. He's launching it. He's gonna try and gash you, which I understand. But first and second down is where they can get that advantage, maybe, and put him behind the sticks. So when they do check it down on third and 14, it's still only fourth and seven, you know, so that they can kind of just make him play behind the sticks over and over. So I think you see that. I also think I think Chris Jones, they're gonna try and find ways to get the one on ones because the Eagles O line's pretty damn good. But you have to find a weakness somewhere. So I'm curious if they align Chris Jones, which guard they put him over. I think they'll put him over Landon Dickerson personally. But I'm curious of how they unlock that five-man fronts, blitz looks, how they kind of open that up for Chris Jones to win his pass rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, last year when they played, Chris Jones was mostly playing defensive end still. So now, you know, he'll be back inside. He'll probably see a few snaps at end, but that was also a game with Andre Dillard and Jack Driscoll at tackle. And the tackles the Eagles are lining up on Sunday are slightly better than their two backups.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Lane Johnson, all pro, and Jeremiah Lott like has potential to get there if he keeps developing the way he is. So Yeah, that's a little different. When you were sending me those screenshots from that game, I was cracking up. Like, you're like, look at the tackles they're playing. It's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a big improvement for the Eagles anyways. But that's why I think for the Eagles or for the Chiefs is that they have to win through the interior pass rush, which is always a goal. And they have to figure out a way to unlock it because Jeff Stoutland, the Eagles offensive line coach, is really good. He understands personnel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how they unlock Chris Jones especially is going to be really interesting.
Oh, we had a whole talk about Jeff Stoutland, how much he's worth in the first half of the show. So you'll be excited to hear that part.
Yay! we just had a nice little discussion on Jeff Stoutland. It wasn't a lesson show, so don't worry about that. But it was a top 10 non-quarterbacks that, like, led us to the Super Bowl, I believe, is what the theme of it was. And Stoutland was number one with a bullet, 1A.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You know, hey, we have a type on that show. We like to talk about certain things, and of course, he's going to personify that.
Offensive line coaches, yeah, that does check out. All right, do you want to give a prediction for this game?
Sure, why not? I am going. I am going with a Chiefs victory. I think it's going to be a great game. If I want to give a score, I'm going to say it's going to come right at that over-under number. I'm going to go with 27-24 for the Chiefs. I think it's going to be there's going to be a lot of drives, but I think there might be a couple turnovers. You know, maybe some of the fumble luck goes against the Eagles. And I think Spagnuolo does enough, and they just kind of run out of time for the Eagles. You know, they have to, you know, they can't just go to the run game for the whole second half, making Hurts throw a little bit more, get him out of their preferred game script, and Patrick Mahomes is going to find a way. Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes.
I mean, it's a fair argument to make for sure. Nate, where can people check out the rest of your Super Bowl coverage this week?
At The Athletic, especially The Athletic Football Show podcast with, again, Robert Mays. He must not be named is what we call him. But yes, The Athletic Football Show. You also find me in my written work at The Athletic or on Twitter. I probably will be posting a few stuff tonight. So Nate_Tice, you can find me on Twitter.
Tremendous. Nate, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to my guests for this X's and O's show, Jeff Schwartz and Nate Tice, two former players, two different perspectives on the game, but same prediction. Will I have the same prediction as them? You will have to see tomorrow in my column at ESPN.com. Or I didn't do a prediction on ESPN Daily. So you can listen to ESPN Daily for more of my thoughts on the game, but no predictions there. Prediction in my column tomorrow on ESPN.com. We'll be back next week on Monday recapping the Super Bowl. I know it's not really a surprising topic, but that's what we're going to do. It should be a fun game. Hope you guys are looking forward to it. I definitely am. And we'll be back next week. So thanks so much for listening.